Welcome to episode 52 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. The topic for this episode and the title is Life Without Apple After My Mac Mini Computer Crashed. So there it is. If you've been listening, you know that on Tuesday of last week, I had a podcast episode focused on how a person can become less dependent on Apple computers and Apple products and the Apple ecosystem. And Apple was announcing last week that they were launching a new line of computer-powered chips that run on Apple silicon. So the computers are actually, by all appearances, identical to the old ones, but this Apple silicon, Apple-developed computer processor chip was announced. And in addition to that, a couple of days later, Apple released Big Sur, the operating system that is OS 11. So after many years of OS X, OS 10, they're stepping it up to OS 11. So I installed OS 11 on an older MacBook, and it's the MacBook that's not the MacBook Pro. It's not the regular MacBook. It's not the MacBook Air. It's the MacBook that's a 12-inch MacBook, similar in lightweight and slim design as the MacBook Air, but smaller. Well, anyway, before I get too far into the podcast, I want to give you the overview. So if you're someone who follows along and listens to these episodes and just takes in the overviews, that's what I try to do at the beginning of each episode, is give you a quick rundown. So basically what happened was the Mac Mini that I ordered in 2019 in December, it had been a little flaky. On occasion, it would like freeze up or crash or seem to have some drive errors. And on one occasion, I was running disk first aid and it said there was some problem that it couldn't repair. So I used a backup and formatted, initialized the hard drive and restored. And then the first aid would run and say that there was no problem with the hard drive. So I assumed that whatever the problem had been, that it was related to some sort of corrupted files, but not corrupted or damaged hardware. And after that, I kept using the computer for months and everything was fine. When Big Sur came out, I wanted to upgrade to Big Sur. And when I did, I'll go into the details in the rest of this episode, but to summarize, I went to upgrade and Big Sur found a hard drive error, a drive error. It said error writing to the drive. And this is after I formatted the drive. So it wasn't like there was some corrupted file in there it needed to interact with. This was a clean drive, Big Sur installing from the installation media. I set up an external known good setup drive. So anyway, bottom line was the Mac Mini was having some problems writing to the solid state drive that's soldered on the motherboard. There's no way to replace it or upgrade it. So if there's something wrong with that, the entire computer motherboard at least needs to be replaced. It's in the shop right now. And the timing, though, was interesting. You know, I just finished, not just last Tuesday with the episode talking about alternatives to Mac, but it's something I've been working on for many months and, years probably. I mean, I work on Android and Chrome OS and Linux, Ubuntu, Pop OS, all these different operating systems, Raspberry Pi. And I recently had ordered and set up a Raspberry Pi. One of my podcast episodes is about that. So I have these different computers that I've recently built and begun using fairly regularly as alternatives to Apple. So when the Mac Mini crashed, I was still a little bit distraught because, you know, I have my external data drive, which is backed up as well. So I had my data, but there are a lot of programs in there I'm used to using, and a lot of things that are installed and configured and set up and ready to go. So I was sort of distraught and trying to see if I could get this to work, but I wasn't. So it went to the shop. And what happened was on Thursday night, what seemed to me to be a little early, Big Sur was showing up as available. So I don't know if it was officially released on Thursday or if it was supposed to be Friday, but whatever. So now let me go into the details a bit. And I assume there may be some of you who are listening because you're interested to learn more about what to do when your computer crashes, and maybe you have an interest specifically in the Mac Mini. So I'll try to cover some of that. And also the benefits of having alternative equipment set up and ready to go. I was talking in my episode two episodes ago, so it would have been episode 50 from last Tuesday, about how it's helpful to have multiple systems running in parallel. So at this point, I've had a Windows desktop computer that I built and the Raspberry Pi, and then I do have this older MacBook, but it's kind of slow, tiny screen. It's not something I would want to spend a lot of time on. But I've had these different machines that I'm using for different tasks. And I've been finding that while in the past I was able to do everything with Apple, it seems like the Windows computer is a little better suited for some tasks. And so I've enjoyed using that more. And now with the Apple computer, the Mac Mini in the shop, I'm really now tested to see, okay, can I do my day-to-day work, which is like sometimes 12 hours a day, on this Windows computer? And in addition to using my own computers, I end up working on other people's computers. So I'm working on Windows anyway because I'm repairing or upgrading or cleaning a computer. One of the capabilities that I wanted to enable and set up for the Windows computer is the ability to scan, because particularly this year, 2020, has been a whirlwind, and I've been working pretty much 7 days a week and just not having time to do the kind of mundane paperwork processing that one needs to do either for their personal life or for business. And I've been handling the urgent items that are time sensitive, but the things that really could be done now or 6 months from now, I've not really been focusing on. The nicer HP printer, scanner, copier, fax machines generally come with some free OCR software. OCR stands for optical character recognition. And the company that they've partnered with in recent years has been Iris, I-R-I-S, or also you might have seen it as Read Iris. The free version that comes with the device is generally not going to be as full-featured, maybe not as fast, maybe, you know, not as accurate or something like that. So I wanted to have the more robust version. And also, I noticed that the paid version of Read Iris, like the enterprise corporate version, had the ability to do batch processing. And I would really like that ability to take, you know, 100 files and run them through this OCR process, where maybe I have a photo of a document, but it's not been processed yet, so the text on the page is not recognized. And I thought for myself, and perhaps as a service that I could offer through the business, to be able to do bulk OCR. So I got that software installed and upgraded and working with the scanner. So that's something I've been able to do since Friday when the computer went into the shop, and now it's been Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we're into Tuesday. I've been spending a few days just scanning in old papers because I was set up and running already with the Windows computer to do that. So it was a really good feeling to get through piles of papers, hundreds of pages of documents that had come in the mail or come with shipments, invoices, and that type of thing, that it's just good to save and have on file in case you need to look up a receipt for something, but otherwise don't need to be piled up around the office. So I was able to get through a lot of that, and it's fast on the Windows computer. I didn't intentionally think about this, but the processor that I got for the Windows computer that I built is probably equivalent in power to the Mac Mini. So the responsiveness has been really quite nice, and the software took a little getting used to. So that's one task. The other is regarding email. And I've mentioned in previous episodes about the program called Thunderbird. It's an email client similar to the software from Microsoft called Outlook or the mail program that comes with Windows. There are different programs you can get to manage your emails. And on Apple computers, there's a mail program. I had been finding that with the mail program on Apple, there were just long delays. And then suddenly it would say, you know, downloading 20,000 emails. And I think, what's where? What, since when? You know, and I leave the computer on because I know that there are tasks that need to be done in the background. And some of those get done when you're not using the computer, but when it's on. So, you know, updates, different cleanup processes. But anyway, yeah, Apple Mail had been like super slow. It was using massive CPU power and causing the system to sort of be overheating a little bit, not to the point of damaging it, but to the point that, you know, you'd hear the fans going. I have a temperature monitoring utility program, so I make sure that the computer doesn't overheat. But Apple computers are known for having these issues with the thermal cooling. They overheat. And I notice with like the MacBook Pro and any of their products that have like a Core i7 that has turbo mode or whatever, you know, it's going to turbo until it overheats and then it slows down. Because I'd been having these issues with the Apple Mail program, and I saw that there were many other people having similar issues with it running slow and just being quirky, I did go through and I removed a lot of emails that were stored on servers, and I stored them locally. So that's one thing a person can do. And I reduced the number of email rules that I had so that it wasn't crunching away on those processes. And I also got rid of any smart mailboxes because those are dynamic, real-time searches of all your emails. And those types of things that I just mentioned can slow down the email program. It did help to clean it up. I also removed some accounts that had been loaded in there, and I separated out some accounts. That's part of a separate project, which was basically having issues with Network Solutions emails and their new system that does not allow, at least from an iOS device, to send messages out from a common mailbox with different sender addresses. Anyway, not going off on that tangent. So I mentioned scanning, and then with email, I found the Windows computer was, to me, performing in a much more satisfactory way. With Thunderbird, you get pretty detailed information about what's going on. If a mailbox is being updated or synchronized, you can see that information and you're not left wondering, you know, is a certain task completed yet? One problem I was having with Apple Mail was that I would move some messages from, let's say, the server to a local storage folder, and it would look like those messages moved pretty quickly. But then I'd go look at those emails, and some of the ones that had attachments just wouldn't even open up at all, or others would open, but the attachment wouldn't be there. So it was clear to me that in the background, Apple Mail was still doing something, and it wasn't telling me it was doing something. And so I might think that some files had moved, but they hadn't. So that's a bad situation, because you might think your files are moved and then go ahead and delete them from their source once you're confident that they seem to be in the new location, but then they aren't fully moved over. So that was a problem. And what I found really works better is just to use the copy function. So copy all these emails from here to here. Almost in the same way, it's better to use the copy function if you're moving lots of files from one hard drive to another, rather than using the move feature, because the move feature has to copy and then go back and delete. And if there's some problem in the middle of all that, you can have things halfway copied over and halfway deleted. It's a mess. So you're better off just doing a copy, wait until it's complete, and it's much faster because the computer has only one task to do. So same with these emails. If you say, well, copy from my inbox to an archive locally stored on the computer, that'll go much quicker. But anyway, with regard to email, it was great to use Thunderbird. It's been great to use Thunderbird on the Windows computer because it's really pretty fast. And I like the features that Thunderbird has. Those are really two big categories of tasks. And I guess the other is things I need to do on the web. So I've been using the Edge browser and Bing as a search engine just to try that out. And that's been working fine. So that's a big chunk of the work that I've had to do, at least in the last 3 or 4 days. Many hours of scanning and doing emails and some web things and ordering products for clients. And I've had a couple of computers that I've been needing to work on, so I've been working on those and thus not really been on my own computer that much. But I just thought that for those of you who are following this podcast along and you listen to the episode on Tuesday about having alternatives to Apple, you'd find it interesting that, you know, within about 48 hours, I was forced to find an alternative to Apple. And I was thankful that I had that set up already. And I guess the takeaway, the lesson is it's good to have some sort of alternate backup computer that's just kind of up and running and that would be satisfactory as an alternate computer in case your main computer goes down. And I do tell people that that's a really economical way to go. If you can get a used Windows computer for $150, $200, that's a great alternate system. And you maybe have some task that you do on that computer every day, that among the tasks you need to do, you update a spreadsheet on that computer, or you do certain web tasks, or whatever it might be, you know that that computer is up and running. Maybe you have an email client on there, so it's a backup essentially of your emails. But that was a big lesson learned, that having an Apple alternative, having the Windows computer up and running, working in parallel with my primary system, I was able to just turn my chair around and continue working when the main system crashed seamlessly. So I really liked that. And having economical alternatives is important. If a person has a computer that crashes and it's not in warranty and you're kind of hooked into this addictive buying of expensive Apple equipment, you've got to come up with, you know, $1,500, $2,000. And it's one of the reasons why I've shied away from their high-end computers. I don't want to develop a lifestyle or a work style that requires these $3,000, $4,000 Apple high-end computers. Because if something goes wrong, I can't just go out and get a used MacBook from 5 years ago. I've got to go out and get the identical powered machine to do whatever those tasks were that I thought I had to do. So that's something I've tried to avoid. And I've tried to go with the lower end Apple equipment and tasks that aren't that demanding and just adjust my workflow and lifestyle to that. I've actually been doing less video editing, not that it's considered that intensive these days. Most computers are able to handle it, but it's a bit time consuming, uses up drive space, and it is one of the more processor intensive tasks. The other lesson learned through this crash experience was the importance of having a good backup. And with Apple, it's easy because you can have their included Time Machine backup software running. It backs up every hour incremental. Anything that's been added or changed gets backed up every hour. And if you need to go back and find a file, they have a nice visual interface where you go back to 3 hours ago or 3 days ago or 3 months ago, and you can find old files. So if you have your computer fully backed up and it needs to go into the shop, if you have to erase it for some reason, you know, you can just bring everything back. So that's very handy. And I was able to do that. Something that I've done also is when I experienced the last oddity with the Mac Mini, and it just wasn't working right, and I had to basically start over again and install Catalina. I made a good backup before that happened, and I've kept that backup separate with a little sticker that says good backup. So I know if for some reason my more recent backup doesn't work, it would be a real bummer because there'd be some things in there that I would lose. But if the more recent backup didn't work, I could go back to that one. And similarly, this more recent backup is a fresh, complete backup. It doesn't have many months of incremental files on it. It's just was done in probably 3 or 4 backup runs. So I like to have a backup that I know is fairly fresh and non-complicated by too many incremental backups. It was really helpful in this instance to have a local authorized Apple repair center, because otherwise I would end up having to ship off the computer to an Apple repair center or drive 2 hours to the nearest Apple store and leave it off for repairs. So I really appreciated having that option available. And yet with these repairs, even when they're in warranty, it can take a few days that you're waiting in the queue behind others, and then eventually your computer gets looked at, some diagnostics are run, and based on that, parts can be ordered. But then that might take another few days for the parts to arrive, and then another day or two for the computer to end up on a workbench and have somebody working on it. So you could be without your computer for a week or more. And that's another reason why it's helpful to have these alternatives. Either a Windows computer and an Apple computer, or 2 Apple computers or something, but to have a duplicate redundant setup for getting your work done. I use the Raspberry Pi computer in the mornings as kind of my initial starting of the day task computer. And I have a spreadsheet that I just keep track of my weight and how much sleep I got and all of that. And so I like using the Raspberry Pi because it doesn't have a fan, or at least the fan is optional if you keep it well ventilated. And that means it's quiet and it's just sort of a simple interface to work with. So I don't start my day with all of the things on my computer desktop or looking at a row of 20 different programs that I might need to be getting into at any moment of the day. So starting with the Raspberry Pi, I really like that. And it has proved to be also a helpful alternative backup computer when my other computer was not working. And in addition to going into the shop, as I've mentioned, there have been a few times when I did have to restore it from a backup, and that can take 3 or 4 or 5 hours during a busy day. So I've already been using the Raspberry Pi and the Windows computer for work when the Mac Mini wasn't available. And I should clarify that I was, you know, in no means stepping away entirely from the Apple ecosystem over the last 4 days. I still have my iPhone up and running, my iPad, and also this older MacBook, the slim MacBook. I've been able to use that for a couple of tasks. But mostly, I would say 90% of what I've been doing, I've been able to do on the Windows computer and on the Raspberry Pi. I still use my iPhone as I normally would. But not having the Mac Mini as my main computer, that has been really kind of a bummer in some ways, but been able to work around it. I think if I had it to do over again, I might have considered a Mac Pro, just because there really are serious thermal issues with the Mac Mini and even with an Apple laptop. And at least the Mac Pro has better thermal management, better cooling, bigger fans, more space inside there, and channels for the air to flow through. But unfortunately, the Apple Mac Pro is priced at $6,000 for the most basic unit, which is similar to the computer I built for about $600, you know, in terms of processing power, which is unfortunate because the people to whom a toolless case and modular component computer would appeal to, those people are high school kids that like gaming, or college students who are into tinkering and building a computer. That's who would really like the Mac Pro. And to forget about the pro part, obviously there are people needing a high-end Apple computer, but this Mac Pro is not much more impressive than a regular iMac. In fact, an iMac gives you a display, which you wouldn't get with the Mac Pro, and an iMac gives you much more processing power for $2,000 instead of $6,000. I mean, huge cost savings. And so the person actually it's looking for performance is not going to spend $6,000 for this big metal box that you have to then go out and buy a display for. And so Apple, I think, maybe needs to rethink their strategy on the Mac Pro. They also have, in addition to the really nice, really fast iMac computers that are about $2,000 for a nice one, or $2,300 maybe, they have an iMac Pro. So somebody who's doing video work or any kind of intensive DNA sequencing or something like that, you can get an 18-core iMac Pro, and that should be able to do most of what a pro person would need to do. And so the actual Mac Pro computer, really all it offers is this cool capability of being able to, without any tools, open up the case, swap out components, and install third-party hard drives or memory or whatever. And again, it's people that can afford a $6,000 computer or with a little bit more memory and storage and processing power, we're talking about probably $10,000. People that can afford to do that, they're not going to be sitting around on a Saturday afternoon tinkering with computer parts anyway. They're doing things with the computer. And so they'd probably be smart enough just to go ahead and get an iMac. So anyway, that's, I guess, a little bit of a tangent, but that's why I wanted a Mac Pro but didn't get one, because I just felt like it wasn't very practical or economical. And that's kind of what, for me, one of several factors got me interested in looking at Windows again, because I thought, I don't want to be spending $10,000 on an Apple computer if I can build one for $1,000 or $1,500 with equivalent capabilities. It just didn't seem practical. And I know that I can do video editing and pretty much everything I need to do on a Windows system. So anyway, that's why I've gone this route. A feature I use a lot on the Apple computer with my iPhone is to share files, pictures, links, web pages back and forth quite easily with something that's called AirDrop. So I can find something on my phone and then bring it up on the computer. That feature isn't available on a Windows computer, and a lot of the programs that you might use on the Apple computer are not available on the Windows computer. So Apple Calendar and Apple Notes and Pages and the spreadsheet, etc. So Numbers is Apple's spreadsheet program. Well, there is something, though, that you can do, and that is to go to the website iCloud.com. It's Apple's web portal to, I would say, all things iCloud, but it's most things iCloud. And what you get in there would be your Apple iCloud email. You have access to that. Contacts, notes, calendar, photos, and your Apple iCloud drive, as well as access to all of your iCloud stored spreadsheets, presentations, word processing, and you can run those apps. Pages, Keynote, and Numbers can be run through this iCloud.com web portal. So that gives you what appears on the screen to look like kind of an iPad experience. Big screen, colorful icons, the same as what you're used to seeing on an iPhone or iPad or Apple computer, only it's on a Windows computer. So that's one way that, depending on your tasks and what work you need to get done, that's one way of having a very inexpensive Apple computer would be to go ahead and, for $150, get a nice used Windows laptop and then go to the iCloud.com website, and you can interact with all of your iCloud synchronized data that can go between that web interface and your iPhone or iPad. But I found that to be really handy. I wanted to take a look at my calendar and copy and paste some items from contacts into the Evernote Notes app. And I've mentioned that before, although I didn't mention it in this episode, that I use the Evernote Notes app, and it works on the iPhone, the iPad, Windows, Mac. It's a great note-taking app. And so that I found to be really handy during this time when the computer had crashed. So I was able to just swivel my chair around, go to the Windows computer, and keep taking notes. But between that and having my email accounts already set up in Thunderbird on the Windows computer, I had email, notes, the web, most of my Apple iCloud apps available through the web portal, and really have not had too much trouble continuing my work. And that's one thing you do also, is just find tasks that you can do with great efficiency with the tools you currently have access to. So I think that was partly what I was doing as well, is just choosing to do the scanning of those papers and some other tasks that I needed to get done that could easily be done with the Windows computer. I will probably do a follow-up podcast episode to let those of you who are interested know how this all turned out. What was wrong with the computer? How was it fixed, and where I'm going next with it. I plan to just keep working along as I have been, but I do want to get a sense that I can rely on the computer. Because thermal cooling issues have been a problem, and I've noticed it as a problem, and the promise of the new Apple M1 chip, I'm kind of interested in trying out one of the new Apple computer systems that use that new Apple silicon to see if it really is as fast and low power and cool running as they promise. So I think to wrap up this episode, I would say that the advice I would have for people is that it's really important to have a good backup of your computer. It's helpful to have an external drive with your data files on it that you regularly copy to another drive, and also have other devices that you can spread your work around to, using an iPad or a Windows laptop or a Raspberry Pi or something, so that if, and unfortunately it's when, you know, things don't work, there's always something that comes up. It reduces the stress considerably. Because imagine what it would be like if you were dependent on one device and one device only, and suddenly you didn't have that device. Now you don't have access to your websites, your emails, contacts, etc. That would be a messed up situation. Even, you know, having an extra phone. I have a Motorola Moto X phone that runs on Android, so I have this alternate phone if something happens to mine. And it's just a reassuring way to have things set up. And for that kind of peace of mind and reassurance, a lot of people will buy extended warranties. But even with an extended warranty, you hear these stories about how somebody has a laptop that's broken and they take it to the big box store and they say, well, we'll try to get that fixed for you. And then they're without their computer for 2 weeks. And so then you still don't have peace of mind. But with one of these used Windows laptop computers that's up and running, if anything happens to your computer, well, you just turn around and use that other computer. And sometimes it's necessary to have a computer to fix a computer. You know, if your computer doesn't start up, you're going to need to Google what's wrong with that. And maybe when you Google the problem, the answer will be, well, you need to go to the manufacturer's website, let's say Dell, and download a firmware update and put it on a USB memory stick and flash drive, and then plug that into your computer. And when you start up, go into the BIOS and install that new firmware for your computer, and that might fix the problem. Well, you're going to need a working computer to do all that, to fix the computer that's not working. And that's just one example of many. If you had a virus or something going on with one computer, you'd want another that you can fall back on. I let people know that it's going to be so much cheaper just to have two or three extra computers lying around, so that if one of them falls off the table or the power cord gets chewed by a puppy, whatever it might be, that you have at least, you know, one or two computers in the household that are up on a higher shelf that are only being used by adults. And that way you distribute the risk of problems across multiple devices, and there's less likelihood that you'll be without a functioning computer. in podcast episode 51, that episode I edited and uploaded entirely using the Windows computer and using the Audacity software for audio editing. That's a task I normally would do on the Apple computer, but since it was in the shop, I was able to do that on the Windows computer. Well, I think that's about all I can think of for now to share regarding the Mac Mini crash, and I hope you're doing well. Thanks for taking time to listen to this episode. I appreciate all of the positive comments and feedback and subscriptions and shares and all of that, and I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.